Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. A house garden may do a lot more for us than provide a home to pretty flowers and plants or tomatoes and zucchini. It can also provide an important service to the community and to the planet. Joining us to talk about how and why are Chris Hartley, Coordinator of Science Education at the Missouri Botanical Gardens Butterfly House in Faust Park. Kim Reese is a horticulturist at Sugar Creek Gardens in Kirkwood. Linda Daniel is a LEED certified architect and a member of the Missouri Gateway Chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council. There is a related event next week we'll be telling you about a little bit later. It's titled Greening Your Community, Saving the Planet, One Garden at a Time. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don.
I'd like to ask this question of each of you, and I'll start with you, Kim, first. You know, I think one of the things you'll be talking about next week at this event is using the garden as a tool. From your perspective, what do you mean by that?
It means that plants are more than just a pretty face, that plants serve the purpose of attracting pollinators, and I'm sure Chris will touch on this, but pollinators are responsible for about 30% of the food we eat. So it's not a small deal. It's a pretty big deal. Gardens play, for selfish reasons, we plant gardens too, and they lower stress. There are lots of good reasons to do it, but for sure the pollinator aspect of it is kind of crucial.
What about the saving the planet aspect of it?
Of course. Native plants are cheaper to grow. They're happier in our local environment. You know, they've evolved over thousands of years to like our bitter clay soil and our ridiculously hot, summers. They typically need less watering, and so that's good for the planet, good for your water bill. So I'm not going to say they're dummy-proof, so to speak, but they are a lot easier than getting into some of the fancy hybrids and cultivars.
Right. Linda, what's your perspective on all of this?
Well, as an architect and then as a member of USGBC, we do work with people like Kim and Chris to determine what's needed for our projects to make them LEED certified, which is leadership in energy and leadership in it's LEED. I'll just leave it at that for right now. Leadership in energy
it's
and
to
environmental
make it environmentally
design.
Sound, sure.
To make it environmentally sound. Sorry about that, Don. and so some of the things that I do as an architect and that we discuss in USGBC is that we want to make sure that the plants that are planted on our projects might help with natural habitats, such as butterflies. Going back to the butterflies, they're very important. Mm-hmm. And also protect the grade from erosion. Trees are also wonderful just for shade. And, there's been a big push for vegetated green roofs. And then just selecting plants that are more water efficient. A lot of the native plants are a lot more water efficient and just more effective, better for sustainability and for the environment.
We're really talking about planting smart, are we not? I mean, taking advantage of the aesthetic value of whatever it is we're planting or growing, but also keeping the environment in mind.
Yes, always. Yeah. I think I've luckily been involved with a lot of projects where the landscape architects or the gardens that we do speak with, they're very helpful in helping us determine what are the best plants to put in place on our projects.
This is a relatively new field, is it not? Landscape architecture with the environmental prerogatives in mind?
In the practice that I've been in for 20 years, I've been seeing it all along. Uh-huh. I think it's just more commercially attractive now, and people are more involved in, and I think the schools are doing a very good job. USGBC does work with schools in the area. We have the Green School Quest every year where volunteers from USGBC work with the students, and they may do stuff like They may do composting. They might grow a garden. They might do other energy efficient things like look at their light bulbs and see how efficient the light bulbs. Maybe those need to be changed out to LEDs or to T8s instead of T12s.
Sure,
that sort of thing.
Well, a lot going on.
Yes, a lot going on.
Chris, let me turn to you. Kim mentioned the pollination thing. From what I've read and from what I've been hearing, this is a near crisis situation, is it not?
Well, many of our pollinator species are facing declines in their population across the country, even around the world. And it's had many researchers rushing to figure out why are they declining and what we can do to halt it. I think the thing that many people don't realize at first is the sheer diversity of pollinators that are out there. When we talk about pollinators, we're talking about so much more than honeybees and butterflies. There are hundreds of varieties of other bees in addition to the beetles and flies that also pollinate. Flies are so much more than just dirty house flies. They're beautiful and they're all over your flowers because they pollinate as well.
Yeah. Well, we've been hearing so much about the bees and about the bee colony collapse, which is causing a lot of people. We had Peter Raven in here not long ago. He's very concerned, very concerned.
Yes, indeed. And the colony collapse disorder, which does affect the honeybees, is something that we should be very concerned about. Without honeybees, we would lose that 30% of food that Kim was alluding to earlier, because the honeybee is the main pollinator for our food crops, for sure. Hmm. And if we, as a society, can't figure out some way to reverse that trend in honeybee collapse, we're going to have to scramble to figure out a way to grow those foods.
And also, I know it's something you'd have to be concerned about, is the monarch butterfly.
And the monarch butterfly is another species that's been of specific concern lately. There's been a lot of wonderful conservation work being done to plant the milkweeds, which are the only plant its caterpillars can survive on, and kind of restore the habitat that's been lost to bring it back.
Let me just jump in here real quick.
Absolutely.
I can say with definite certainty that milkweed plants are the number one best-selling native plant at Sugar Creek Gardens, hands down. The educators like Chris are doing such a great job of getting that message out that the milkweed plant, the host plant for the monarch, is desperately needed to help them through their migration throughout North America. And people are getting the message. So even people who are brand new to native gardening, who don't really know what direction to start, will say, you know what, I'm going to start with the milkweed because I'm going to help the monarchs.
Mm-hmm. Milkweed, is it native?
It is. There are several different varieties, some that are shade tolerant, some that are sun tolerant, some that will take moisture, some that will take average soil. So if you've got a yard, you've got a spot for milkweed.
What other things can you advise the home gardener with regard to what they should be planting and what makes the most sense for where we live?
You know, what I've seen from the home gardening standpoint, I've been at Sugar Creek for 10 or 12 years. And when I started, I'm not even sure we had a native plant section. You know, maybe we had some accidentally, but each year it's grown. The interest and excitement has grown exponentially. So that today, probably, you know, I'm not going to even guess, a good portion of our customers come in and say, where are your native plants? I need native plants. There's, I think, a misconception out there that native plant gardens can look kind of a little wild, a little overgrown, a little weedy. And if that's the look you're going for, you can certainly accomplish that. But there are many ways, many smart selections that you can use to get a more refined look. And I mentioned yesterday that, you know, we're in Sugar Creek, it's in Kirkwood. I live in Webster Groves. And I think of the more traditional boxwood, hosta sort of loving neighborhoods, mine included, you can definitely put some native plants in there that look smart, that look pretty, that are going to give you, you know, some pop for a good portion of the summer. And with some smart planting, you can make it work.
What are some native plants?
Right now, since we're in fall, I'm seeing the asters are starting to pop. Lots of purples out there. Solidago, which is a brilliant yellow. I happen to have in front of me, even though I realize this is radio, but I brought a cardinal flower. This is another one of those sort of miracle perennials. It's this gorgeous red color really the best red in the history of reds. Am I right? Chris, you're shaking your head. It will go sun. It will go shade. It will go wet. It will go average soil conditions. So this is one of those plants you can't go wrong. And it kind of pops up. It starts blooming in August when everything else in the garden is kind of brown and, you know, turning their toes up. You get this wonderful, this burst of color with the cardinal flower. Beauty berry is a wonderful shrub. You get great purple berries along the stems. That will take you into winter. A lot of the native trees have fabulous fall color. Sassafras, service berry. Chris, jump in. Do you have any favorites?
So there are many plants that I recommend to people who are wanting to attract butterflies to their yard. Certainly the milkweeds that we've been mentioning, but there are many others, like the blazing stars, Liatris species. Butterflies are attracted to them like they were a magnet, like they had never seen a flower before. So I tell everyone who wants to attract butterflies, grow blazing stars.
Oh, Chris, in the nursery where we've got just hundreds and hundreds of varieties of flowers, blazing star is the first flower they'll go to. It is really a magical flower.
And, you know, there are many, many others, but if you've been growing more ornamental plants and wonder, well, why do the butterflies never visit? Try a native, because they grew up with them, as it were. They really like them.
Linda, you're taking all this in and helping people design what they may be putting up in their backyard. How much of this do you have to know?
We really do depend on Chris and Kim for this information. I always like to say that as architects, we're not so biology orientated, and these guys are. But I've learned myself. I did a renovation in my house just a couple of years ago, and we put in native plants so that we would have some green during the winter. We did put in the boxwood too, but you know, we investigated that, and I asked, and I called nurseries, and I mean, anybody can do that.
Did you put in a rain garden?
No, but I'd like to. I'd like to.
Why don't you explain why that is? Because a lot of people are doing that now.
What it does, and you all jump in, is it basically catches water that would normally leave a very soggy area, or the water would go on into the sewer system, and it's just catching water, and I wouldn't even know where to start, what plants that would be.
You know what? Right here.
Okay.
Cardinal flower is a good place to start.
I'm going to buy some cardinal flower, I think.
A good place to start in what regard?
That it's a moisture-loving plant. And so if you've got a spot where water tends to sit, then turtle head is a great water lover, cardinal flower.
And there's actually a plant called swamp milkweed, too, which can tend to get a little bit wet and still be beautiful.
Chris, what are some of the other plants that, you know, you talk about milkweed, and that's what everybody hears with regard to the monarch butterfly. What are some of the other plants that attract butterflies, if you will?
Sure. So the great news before I even start is that your possibilities tend into, you know, dozens, if not 100 plants that would attract butterflies to you. Some really great ones are the asters, which are in bloom now, as well as the goldenrods. Goldenrods don't think of people as being something that can, people don't think of it as something that can be beautiful, but it's gorgeous right now. And the purple cone flowers as well as the liatris blazing stars that I was mentioning. Mm-hmm. But really, if you visit a place like Sugar Creek or any other nursery, they can recommend many wonderful things that will attract butterflies for you.
And why are butterflies important?
Well, butterflies are important for many reasons. They're beautiful, and that makes them important for many people just for that. They are pollinators, as that's what we've been talking about. In our butterfly house, of course, where we have no bees, our trees still produce fruits. The butterflies have done that pollination. They are incredibly important pollinators.
We have to take a break. We'll do that now, come back, and we'll continue our discussion about gardening, if you will, and how to do that and help save the planet, if you will, and help the environment along the way. My guest in studio, you just heard from Chris Hartley, who is a science educator at the Butterfly House in Faust Park. Kim Reese is a horticulturist at Sugar Creek Gardens, and Linda Daniel is with the U.S. Green Building Council. Back to continue the conversation, if you'd like to be a part of it, give us a call at 382-8255. And send us a tweet, if you would, at STL on Air. We'll be very, very happy to hear from you. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. one of the things we haven't talked about, we have a number of calls I want to get to, is we talk about serving the community as well. And certainly aesthetically with the plants we've been talking about, that is accomplished. But what about growing food stuff, if you will, for the community, urban gardens and that sort of thing? We're seeing a lot of that. I'll turn to you, Kim. Is this something you're seeing? Is this something you're involved with in your operation?
Oh, absolutely. The urban homestead movement is definitely growing, especially in the millennial generation. We see younger homeowners who are, you know, maybe are in their first home and are wanting to maybe do chickens. Or there's a woman at work who is now a beekeeper and has bees at her home. And you know, organic, wanting to do organic vegetables, organic fruit. And I'll just a plug for the natives. Pawpaw is a wonderful Missouri native fruit shrub. You can do a lot with pawpaw, serviceberry. There, you know, there's a variety of even native things you can do.
I have a question here with regard to native plants. Going this route is practical for a lot of reasons, not the least of which I would guess is the fact it's probably less expensive to do that with native growings, if you will, as opposed to those that come from someplace else.
I think they are. I mean, you know, Sugar Creek, we got our start featuring kind of rare and unusual plants, and we've evolved to kind of a full-service nursery. And I think you do end up paying a little more for the fancier hybrids, maybe the colored cone flowers, which we love, some of the fancier hydrangeas, which I adore. But the natives are, you know, you can get seed for very, you know, cost-effective. You can share seed with your neighbors. You can start small with the plug size on up to, you know, a gallon plant, 5 gallon plant on up.
Sure. Let's take some calls. We have a lot of them. I hope we can get to many of them before we have to end this conversation. I'll start with Anna calling from Webster Grove. Anna, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Native plants are important because they are adapted to the area and the climate. And our friend Doug Tallamy, who is an entomologist in Maryland at one of the universities there, talks about the specific native plants, which are the specific host plants for specific insects and caterpillars, which are the specific food source for the baby birds in the spring. And if you don't have those plants and those insects, it's like the monarch with the milkweed. Then you don't have healthy bird populations. I've had a wild yard for 30 years, and the more natives that I put in, the more diverse the bird population.
You go, great girl. That's awesome.
The other thing I wanted to bring up about cultivars of native plants, the insects, the pollinator insects and the butterflies are attracted to specific colors. And when, for instance, a coneflower is made in an odd shade of blue, they don't recognize that. So there's the colors of the native plants are the specific colors that they're going to be attracted to.
Thank you for the call. Chris, you've been nodding. Yeah. Like,
well, I'm very glad that she brought up both of those points about the cultivars, but especially the monarch is a great example of how host-specific butterflies are. Every other kind of butterfly and moth that's out there has its own particular plant that it will only lay eggs on. It's very easy these days for anybody to find this information, either through one of Doug Tallamy's wonderful books or many other books about butterfly gardening. They tell you exactly what those host plants are. So that if you want to see a black swallowtail, put in parsley and dill or golden Alexander, monarchs for milkweed and so on.
Did you say dill? Because we have a call that relates to that particular thing. Yeah, Jennifer in Maplewood, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. I get to share a fun learning experience we had as a family. We were actually pulling up dill weed to get rid of it, and we found 4 caterpillars, and we were able to discover that we had found the black swallowtail, and it was amazing how much dill weed they ate. And we tried to feed them our parsley that we had grown that's more like what you would get in the grocery store, and they did not like it at all. And we were like, we need to make sure that they stay in with the dill weed so that they can continue. But it was really fascinating to discover that that's really what they needed. Thank you.
Jennifer, thanks for the call. Well, did Jennifer teach anybody something?
Well, those black swallowtails in particular are seen in lots of people's yards because many of us grow parsley and dill and fennel, which they host on. So that's a great family learning experience. We also see that coming up a lot at schools where teachers can share that experience with their children. And, yeah, it's a fantastic learning experience for everyone.
I have a quick question for Chris. What are your thoughts about, so you're looking at dill, you see a caterpillar, about cutting that dill, putting it in a terrarium or something, bringing it inside, and which I've done, I will admit, in the past with my kids to get them excited about insects and plants, but do you recommend?
Well, I think what you said is so important. It's a tremendous educational experience. And I just encourage anyone who wants to do that to do your research a little bit about the biology or call the Butterfly House because we already take questions about that and we're happy to help you set it up for success. Because the sad thing about it is when it's not successful. Now, it's very easy to do if you set it up right. So I can't not recommend it. In fact, I do recommend it for teachers and parents and whoever else might want to share that experience.
We'll put contact information, by the way, on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Another caller now. This one is from Benton Park, and it's Steve. Steve, go ahead.
Oh, hi, everybody. I think I got my answer through listening to you all already. I'm somebody who loves to do a garden. I put in fountains, and I know about hosta, and I know about, well, some kind of tree I planted. I know about hops, the purple, but that's it. I mean, you guys on the panel, that's your life. But I work in, I don't have anything to, how do I go to Lowe's and Sam's and know what to ask for, know how to plant it, and know where to plant it?
Well, you want to go to Sugar Creek Gardens. Yeah. That's where you want to go.
I have a nursery, and they sold me some grapevines. But then when I ask them questions about it, they say, well, I don't really know.
Let's get an answer.
You really need to go to the gardens and the nurseries that specialize in native plants or pollinator plants.
Locally owned, too, as opposed to the box stores.
Yeah, the box stores. You know, you may run into somebody there that understands that information, but it's more likely when you have a... I've done that just professionally and for my own self. There's several places in the area, and it's very easy to find that information online now.
Steve, thank you for the call. We'll take another one from Mary in Overland. Go ahead, Mary. You're on the air.
I was trying to attract the hummingbird to get rid of the cutworm, which is also called the grub worm. I know that some people use them for fish bait, but they cut my plants, kill my plants, so I want to get rid of them. And also, I have a lamb's quarter in this yard, lamb's quarter and pork salad. I don't know if any of you are familiar with that, but as a kid, we used to cook it together for a laxative.
Oh, my.
Wow.
Well, Mary, thank you for that tip. We'll just move along. But no, thanks. Our time is getting away. I want to get some reaction to the hummingbird and grubs question. Who would like to take that? Chris?
Well, there are many plants that, again, you can get very specific recommendations for hummingbird-attracting plants at local nurseries.
I'm going to point right now to the cardinal
flower
here.
Cardinal flower is a great example. Trumpet vine. They go to a wild petunia. They go to many things. So it just go get recommendations from a professional, and they will point you right to something that can work for your yard.
Well, I guess recommendations will also be available at your event, and I'll turn to you for what exactly is going on, who is welcome, and what will they find there?
The event is free. It is next Tuesday, I believe, September 20th, 7 p.m. to 9, and at the Ethical Society of St. Louis. It's called Greening Your Community, Saving the Planet One Garden at a Time. And basically the discussion is going to be on how gardens can be used as a tool to care for our planet, help communities in need, and address climate change.
All right. Anybody is welcome, I assume?
Yes, anyone's welcome. This is the third year that USGBC and the Jewish Environmental Initiative and also Missouri Interfaith and Light have paired together for this event. And it's just going to be a fun, I mean, just listen to these guys. I'm so happy to have you guys on the panel next week. But just as to the, today's program, we had some takeaways. We will have that, too, at the event next week. And there's a question and answer session, too.
I was going to just ask if that would be something people will be able to
and
do.
And we will have refreshments and networking with some tables with information also.
Okay. We only have a minute left. Let me see. Do you have a final thought you'd like to leave us with, Kim?
Final thoughts. Everybody can contribute. You know, you've got room in your garden. If you don't have a garden and you have a patio, then use a container. You're good to go.
If you've got a 12 by 12 foot garden, it can still have an impact, right?
Absolutely.
Right? How about you, Chris?
Yeah, I would just like to mention that if you are a teacher or have a community garden or belong to a garden club, Butterfly House can do outreaches for you, or you can call us for information. We are a resource for helping pollinator gardens get established all around the community.
Okay, and Linda, do people have to make reservations at all for the event?
Yes, that is on the USGBC website, so usgbcmissourigateway.org. And so just go to that website, and there you should be able to find Greening Your Community, Saving the Planet, one garden at a time.
We'll put all of that information on our website.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you all so much for being with us. Chris Hartley, science educator at the Butterfly House. Great to see you. Kim Reese, horticulturist at Sugar Creek Gardens.
Thank you.
And thanks for bringing the flower. And Linda Daniel with the U.S. Green Building Council. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.